Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And this is the Donald in the Kitchen. Welcome to our kitchen table. We have got good things in store today. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donald in the Kitchen is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more on their website at www.practicalfarmers.org.
We are going to be discussing the summer bounty today. The gardens are overflowing. Farmers markets are overflowing. At the farmers market, I talked to my favorite sweet corn salesman, Ray Olson, and he was just all full of pride for this new variety. He is trying a variety called American Delight this year, and my, is it tasty. I tried it out. And along with sweet corn, there's flavored salts available, and that was for sale at the farmer's market. Salt Liquors Salt Company has a new variety out this summer called French Tickler. Can we say that on the radio? That's kind of iffy.
How risque. Anyway. No, we won't even go into that means. For those of you that don't know, relax.
Never. Okay. Salt Liquors and French Ticklers.
What's in it?
It is very Herbs de Provence, tarragon, onions, lavender. You can taste the lavender, parsley, marjoram, and vinegar. It was really good on the sweet corn.
Vinegar.
I don't know how they do it, but you know, they kind of make this thing and they dry it all down and put it into sea salt.
Oh, yeah. I suppose the vinegar would dehydrate and add just a tang. That sounds like something that we could sprinkle on these ubiquitous cucumbers that we have right now.
Cucumbers. Today we're going to be talking about pickles. And later, insects. And if we get around to it, we got a few things to say about summer books, too, and recipe books. So, you know, there's a lot of food available now, Donna.
Oh, man. When I went to the farmer's market on Saturday and you walk down and everything is hitting it now. You've got eggplants. You've got tons of cucumbers, all the herbs, all the corn, all the tomatoes, all the peppers and okra and onions and potato, everything.
Oh, it's so good.
And you're in the midst of that. And here's the thing that struck me. This, of course, in Iowa, at least, as in most parts of North America, not all, but most, only happens 2 months out of the year.
Remember winter, folks? Things are not always coming out of the garden.
Well, and here's the thing. Because 12 months out of the year, we can go to the grocery store, and it always looks like this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no... our ancestral memories are missing.
Uh-huh.
You know, for thousands and thousands of years, people living in these kinds of climates, and there were many of them, this was a very special time of year. Now, we walk through the farmer's market, and we go, oh, goody, fresh corn on the cob, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
However, what we're not having to do is when that bloom of bounty comes, that's when everybody had to get really busy in the kitchen because you had to can it and preserve it and things that we can just like leisurely stroll through the market and go, oh, let's have some of this and not have to think about, you know, the story of the ant and the grasshopper. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I remember
that. Okay, I think it's an Aesop's fable, but, you know, the grasshopper fiddled away all summer while the ant was busy storing food. And then, of course, the winter came and the poor grasshopper had nothing and the ants were quite... The thing is, we've all turned into grasshoppers.
Yes, we
have. None of us have to... We don't have to... Of course, we won't starve in the winter like the grasshopper, but it's a kind of important thing. And one of the things I hope we do on the show today is encourage everyone to make at least one product that they can stash away and eat later, that they've made themselves, and perhaps end up with something that you could never buy in the grocery store. And there are still plenty of things, while you can buy the ingredients in the grocery store, if you flavor them yourself in your own unique way, it's you'll end up with things that you cannot buy, which is right. It's and you'll feel so clever when you open them up later, or you give them as gifts, or bring it out for a dinner party or something. So we're going to give you all kinds of methodologies today, and we hope that you'll choose one thing and make it your own.
Oh, Donna and I have been pickling things, and we have some jars lined up here, going from left to right here. We have some bean pickles Donna made, and some...
That one is, I put the beets in because it makes it really pretty. So the kernels of corn end up looking like pomegranates.
Oh, they do.
So it's beets and cabbage and corn. And I packed, of course, a lot of basil and lovage in there. And in the beans, I put basil and lemon.
Very good.
So, and a little lemon basil, although I just didn't have enough lemon basil.
Never.
And what have you
and
made?
I brought some, well, it's, I'm going to be talking about a bread and butter zucchini recipe that I've been making for years, but I use this bread and butter, the vinegar sugar sauce that goes on things. I made okra pickles instead. So I may have some sweet okra pickles here. And
they're refrigerator pickles. So I'm looking at this little recipe card. So here is a bonus tip.
Yeah.
If you go to the farmer's market downtown on Saturday and you go to the Onion Creek booth, Lana is handing out little reprints of this recipe so you can take it home and make your own.
Yeah. Also, here's another little tip. You can go to the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage on khoifm.org, and it is in our recipe section, bread and butter zucchini refrigerator pickles. And
okay, but I bet on the website it doesn't have this cute little onion print on the bottom.
It's not there.
So anyway. This is to encourage you to go to the farmer's market and have a peek around.
And one
Saturday
thing,
mornings downtown.
I got a jar of pickles. Actually, I got it some last year, too, for my friend Julie Schickle, a really nice neighbor. She gave me a jar of something called red hot cinnamon pickles, and I will be talking about them. Now, the bread and butter recipe, really easy. The red hot cinnamon pickles, it is alchemy. It takes 5 days. Count your 5 days. It's an interesting.
Okay, but I have to say, having tasted the red hot cinnamon pickles, That is a unique experience in my life. I have never tasted anything.
I hadn't either. Thank you, Julie.
The texture is really unusual.
Yeah.
So how do you do this?
Okay. Now,
this is alchemical transformation.
Yeah. According to Julie, and I looked this up, if you want the whole recipe, it is on www.tasteofsouthern.com, red hot cinnamon pickles. They stay crunchy. Despite being fooled with for 5 days, these little chunks of
They're not soggy. They're not slimy.
And they're really, they are full
They're yummy.
Of, yeah, because they are never boiled.
Huh.
And so the pickles never get soggy.
Okay, but they're preserved.
They're preserved. You go through, there's pickling lime, there's alum, there's cider vinegar, and then there's sugar, and a whole package of red hot candies.
That's why it tastes like my grandmother.
What possible germ would ever dump into that? But it really does take 5 days. It's not rocket science. It's making pickles. So go to tasteofsouthern.com for this whole process.
So how does it preserve? It's not the sugar that's preserving it. What is it?
Well, it goes through a salt process.
Okay, so that pulls the water out of the cucumbers,
and
right?
Rinse. And then,
I mean, you can't look at this jar and go, oh, that's a cucumber.
Then you put alum. I don't know what alum does, but alum and vinegar.
It's a pH thing.
Yeah.
You simmer.
But never boil. And then you throw
away. So you keep it under
the
boiling point.
And then you put in your vinegar, cinnamon sticks, and your candies, and it sits. I think the sugar and the Vinegar just does something. Anyway, this is red hot cinnamon pickles. And here's a note. Best to use overripe cucumbers that have gotten large and yellow at the end of the season, huh?
That's oh, right, because they're obviously up. Peeled and all the seeds mm-hmm. are taken mm-hmm. out. Because, I mean, when I look at mm-hmm. the jar and it's red,
very red.
Very cute, I wouldn't even, I mean, it could have been a candied fruit for
right,
all I
right,
know. You
right.
you really can't guess quite what it is.
Red hot cinnamon pickles aren't those the darndest things. So, yeah.
I can see why you eat them at Christmas.
Yeah. It's really good.
They're very cool.
Look at them. There are red hot cinnamon pickles that you can just make as a refrigerator pickle. I looked it up, Google. These are, you can can, you take the process through canning. So, and
wait, so these are canned?
Those are canned. Yeah.
So then they finally do hit a high temp or not?
I think, what does it say here?
I don't know. They don't feel like the cucumber.
Sterilize while hot and seal. So it's canned as in
like hot pack.
Hot pack.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, let's say what hot packing is, because this is actually where I began my preserving journey years ago. So when I was living in California, there's fruit all year long, different kinds of fruits. And so from my childhood, you'll remember this, remember when they used to put wax on the tops of the jars?
I do.
Which, of course, in modern times we're not doing because wax is made out of petroleum and maybe it's considered not a good idea. But hot packing is actually really simple. You sterilize the jars and you put the very hot, fresh off the boil fruit into the jar very close to the top. You actually have to take I keep a little pot of boiling water and I dip the rag in it and you have to go around the rim so that nothing is on the rim of the jar and the jar lid makes a complete seal.
Mm-hmm.
And how close to the edge do you go?
Quarter inch.
Very, very close, mm-hmm. right?
And when I do that, I also boil the jar lid so they're
yes.
hot.
Yes, everything.
So hot pack.
But hot packing is... I find it easier than actually canning.
Yeah.
Because all you're really boiling is the jars and the lids.
Mm-hmm.
And then you lay the lid on top and you don't seal it all the way down. You wait till it pings.
It pings. And
now, pinging is, it's a hard thing to describe in a recipe. But what it literally happens is as the temperature drops, of course, that would make a contraction mm-hmm. as it gets colder. Right. Heat expands, cold mm-hmm. contracts. Right. Okay. So the contraction, as it cools down, sucks the lid in, sealing it tight. That's how you get your vacuum seal on it. And you will hear a little, it's not a ping like in a metallic. It's more like a dull little thud. Right.
Clunk.
Yeah. Very good. Very. Could you do that again for us?
Clunk.
Something like that. Yes, very good. Okay, see, now that's better than reading a recipe. At least you have the audio, and it is a sound. Plus, you can see that the lid is slightly indented. And then after that, then you tighten the ring on it. So that is hot packing, and it's very easy to do. And, you know, mostly with fruits and things like that, you really can't go wrong.
Yep.
So even if you're new at this, you just buy a little box of jars, canning jars, and an easy one would be like blueberries. Right now we have such good blueberries. So a simple thing that one could do is you take the blueberries and a little bit of sugar in a pan. I wouldn't add water, right, Lana?
Oh, I would.
A little bit of water.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Tablespoon at the
most.
And don't oversweeten it. But don't undersweet, too sweeten to taste. And then if you wanted to make something that you could never buy as a blueberry jam in the store, you could add a little like lemon zest, for example, or even orange zest.
Mm.
And then I would put in a little black pepper.
And that would cook down and seal it in that hot pack way.
Yeah, you could hot pack that. Or here's even lazier, which I do now a lot. Freeze it. And in small batches. And then you'll have something that's your own.
Very good. Now, Donna, you've been playing around. Well, play, you play, play.
Yeah, okay. Playing around is the right word.
There's
there.
Something that I didn't know even existed. Tell us about sous vide.
Oh, boy. Okay, that is spelled S-O-U-S, separate word, V-I-D-E, which in French means under vacuum. Okay. So it's kind of a, I call it a boy toy. It's something that I didn't, for a number of years, I did not buy because it's just, it's very techy. And
it's a device.
It is a little device. It doesn't take much room in the kitchen, thank goodness. But what it was is mostly used for is, like, for example, if you want to cook a steak to a certain temperature, you put it in a plastic bag and you immerse it in the water. And then you put this little, it's a machine that's, oh, mine is, I don't know, maybe 16 inches tall and it's round. So it's like 4 inches in diameter. You plug it in. And what it essentially does is it has a little fan that circulates the water in the pot and it has a heating element. So you can program it to a very precise temperature, and it will hold that temperature. And doing that allows you to control the cooking enormously. What I didn't like about it originally was that everything was cooked in plastic bags. Well, as you all know, we are not fans of plastic. Plastics migrate. It's just yucky in my brain. So it's like, no, I don't think so. Then I went to Arcadia Arcadia Restaurant in Campustown, and they have a pickle plate. And the pickles were so, so good and crunchy, crunchy, crunchy. So I said to Chef Brian, how do you do this? He goes, sous vide machine. I'm going, oh, right, young boy chef, of course, sous vide machine, da-da-da-da-da. But I said, Brian, I don't really like cooking in pickles. He said, in plastic, he said, well, I don't. I cook in glass cans. Da-da! Then the light bulbs went off. I ran to Amazon. I bought my little sous vide machine. And here we are. So if you want to sous vide your pickles, should you want to invest in this little... I mean, and the sous vide machines can be quite expensive or not so. I don't think I paid more than $100, you know, for... It's a rather extravagant toy. However, it is fun. So to sous vide pickles, you set them, and this is what Brian told me, and it's on the internet too, 140 degrees for at least 3 hours. And then the mixture in the pickle jar has to be, it's more or less half vinegar, half water, and then all the flavorings in the universe that you want to put in there.
Oh, okay, back up. There's a regular canning jar sitting here.
Yeah, I'm using quart.
Quart jars. So... Are there covers on these jars when you do
yes.
this?
Yes. Oh, yes. You put the regular, but you do, it's called a fingertip tightening, right? Mm-hmm. So you put the flat piece on, then you put the ring on, and then you tighten it till you feel it's starting to get tight. Mm-hmm. And then you back off just a tiny, tiny bit because you want it loose enough that the air, as it heats up, can escape. So there you are. You are expanding the heat, which makes the air come out. And then when you take them out of the sous vide machine after 3 hours and you sit them on the counter, then they cool down and they do that same thing where they suck the lid in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Now, as you are making these pickles or anything you want to put in there, do you cook that stuff or does it go into the jar hot?
No. Well, you, so I take a big, several gallon pot, right? And I fill it up with warm water and then I put, you clamp the sous vide machine to the side of the pot and you plug it in and you set it for 140 and it brings the temperature of the water up to 140 degrees. And then you take your prepared whatever you want to sous vide. Mm-hmm. And the way I've set it up, I can do 4 quarts at a time, right? So then you just set them in there and then you walk off and forget about them for 3 hours. And then you take them out and they're done. So the only thing cooked in these jars, I did pre-cook the beets because I thought that they probably wouldn't cook all the way through. So did you taste
them? No. Another question. So you don't have to cook the say you're doing a spice and sugar and vinegar or spice and vinegar sauce or a
no.
liquid. You don't pre-cook that.
No.
Oh, save
because
time and money.
At 140, it's enough heat and for that length of time that it – so, like, the corn still has some crunch, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So the corn one, I was just using what was in the refrigerator. Let's see how the cabbage is. I haven't tasted this yet. Oh, it's nice and crunchy.
Yeah, the idea of a crunchy pickle, I guess that's kind of like the holy grail. And this is one way to do it, the sous vide stuff.
It's really easy. If you have the machine. Now, of course, if you get the machine, it does all kinds of other tricks, too. But I haven't really – I mean, people cook whole meals with this. I did discover that if you don't want to cook in plastic, you can buy silicone Ziploc pouches.
Reusable?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And that's good for sous vide. And apparently also people cook hard-boiled eggs. You know, like if you ever – you know, like – on a hard-boiled egg, I like it if the yolk is still a little bit creamy.
It's now, so that's, hard to do.
You almost can't. It's like it's luck if you get that. But with a sous vide machine, you can do it every time.
How does it know? Oh, my goodness.
Well, there's a temperature. It's temperature and time. So go on the internet, and it'll tell you how to do that. I haven't done it yet, but I sort of intend to do it eventually.
What this...
I know. It's just a funny little toy.
The idea that you can make the good old glass jars with the lids, and that I didn't realize that everything was in plastic with sous vide. Oh, very good.
No, I know. Because this morning when I opened them up, they were, you know, you had to sort of pry the lid off. So although I don't make enough, I just keep mine in the refrigerator. But these are Lana's beans. These are Lana's Romano beans.
Yeah, I like the flat beans.
Oh, so me too.
That's what these are.
Me too. And I put pieces of lemon in and
the lemon
basil
is really good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't get much of the basil flavor. Oh, mm-hmm. A little bit after.
It's there. It isn't just, mm-hmm. Yeah. Lemony beans. Now, what a nice, easy thing to do.
Yeah, and you use different vinegars, whatever, like I think one of these was a rice wine vinegar. And the other one, was the champagne vinegar. Ah. So it's half vinegar, half water, a tiny bit of sugar, not too much, but that's not necessary. I just, you know how vinegar is so puckery. So anyway, there it is. Oh, see the basil leaf floating in there?
Mm-hmm. There it is.
Yeah, they're kind of pretty, too.
So this is a season to think about putting up things in jars. You brought in some books, too, Donna. I bet there's lots of advice out there.
Well, we're in the glut of cucumber season, right? Now, I did one thing I made this week that I really, really loved was, you know, the classic cucumber where you just, what is it? It's vinegar, water, sugar, salt and pepper, right? Mm-hmm. And you just pour it over the cucumbers. Well, I used a tarragon vinegar that I had made. And I can't remember what kind of vinegar I used because I made it last year. But I had it sitting in the pantry, and it's very tarragon-y and really delicious. So I made that for a cucumber salad. Mm-hmm. Oh, yum, 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 yum. And so easy.
The thing is, you can just make one cucumber at a time and put it for supper. I mean, not
It wasn't not enough. I actually did three cucumbers.
No, cucumbers, okay.
And, you know, you don't have to skin them. You don't have to seed them. And here's the ultimate lazy thing. I just got out the food processor with a slicer blade. So I just washed the cucumbers off, cut the ends off, ran them through the machine, poured the stuff over them. Oh, I did add one of your lemons, which I also, no, I'm sorry, onions.
Ah, onions.
You got to put onions in them. I used one of your red onions, which I also ran through the slicer.
Uh-huh.
And it was so, and everybody at dinner just loved it. Hello.
Yeah. The idea of salting things when you make pickles and a lot of recipes mm-hmm. call, you salt things ahead of time that breaks down the cell walls of cucumbers and zucchini and
as does vinegar.
Yeah, yeah. But it helps it absorb things. Mm-hmm. So that's what the salt is for, besides the fact it's going to taste good. But, yeah, there it is. There it is.
So many, many things.
So I'll read this bread and butter zucchini.
Oh, yes. Tell us how you did this. This is delicious. Okay. And not only that, it's really pretty because she's put peppers, red.
Yeah.
And
now this I put
yellow.
I put okra and hot and sweet peppers in it. But
and
this,
what is this whole pepper? You stuck a whole pepper in.
That is a small thing just called a mini bell. That's a sweet pepper. But it probably has picked up some of that other hot pepper that's in it. So there you go.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Brett, I got this recipe from my college roommate. I have been making this recipe forever and a day, back before I even knew what I was doing. Now, this is, you can do this as a refrigerator pickle. You do not need to can these, but you can if you want to. When you have way too many small to medium-sized zucchinis or summer squash, use this recipe. 6 cups sliced zucchini or summer squash, 1 cup thinly sliced onion, 1 cup sliced green pepper or green or red peppers. Option, and I take heed of this option. I always like to add a hot pepper to each jar or mm-hmm. a hot pepper in with some of this. So cut that up too. 1/4 cup pickling salt. Don't use table salt, iodine, and salt.
Pickling salt
will discolor the pickles if you use iodine.
All right, can you talk? Because I don't use pickling salt. Mm-hmm. So tell me,
well,
what is pickling salt?
For long-term storage, mm-hmm. iodine has been added to a lot of table salt.
And, oh, right.
And this does not have the iodine in it. It is just...
So could you use sea salt then?
Yes, yes, yes. It'll say on the label if it's got
okay, iodine. So any
non-iodine-y salt.
Okay, no. Okay.
And then you toss all this stuff in a big bowl and with the salt. And let it stand for 2 or 3 hours. And then...
At room temperature.
At room temperature. Mm-hmm. Then rinse and drain in a pan on the stove. Heat.
Oh, so you're sucking...
Yep, yep. All that stuff sits on the counter. Mm-hmm. Then... In a pan on the stove, you heat 1 cup dark vinegar, 2 cups sugar, 1 teaspoon mustard seed, 1 teaspoon turmeric, 1 teaspoon celery seed, 2 tablespoons fresh dill, and
no sugar.
No. Yes, 2 cups sugar.
Oh, 2 cups of sugar.
Yeah, these are sweet pickles.
Okay,
yeah.
Now when you're saying dark vinegar, what do you mean there?
Cider vinegar.
Cider. Oh, yeah. Plain old cider vinegar. Okay.
Just plain old. Just plain mm-hmm. old. Then you pour it over the veggies, after the rinsed veggies, and put it in a glass container or a big glass container. Refrigerate at least 24 hours before eating them. Pickles will keep for up to 2 weeks, or you can these. Again, go to the Donalana Kitchen recipe page.
Okay, are these canned or these are refrigerator
those
pickles?
Those are canned.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Those are canned because I haven't made my big batches this year. So those are
oh, so these
year.
Are from last year?
Those are from last
oh,
year.
Oh, really
yes,
good.
Very good.
It's so cute with these whole baby peppers in it.
Yeah, again, what's out in the garden? You stick it uh-huh. in a jar. You stick it in a jar. There you go.
Ooh, yummy, yummy.
There you go. So we've learned about sous vide. And we've learned about, do you have, let's see, we've got like 2 minutes. Do you have a pickling recipe book that you would like
well,
to talk
I have
about?
Several that I bought, and I want you to... This one is one of my favorites. It's called Asian Pickles by Karen Solomon. It's a few years old, but what we, you know, in America, we think of pickles mostly as like dill or sweet, basically. And even the vegetable ones still kind of use that same flavor profile. Well, what I love about this, because this is the Asian, so she goes through the traditions of Japan, Korea, China, India, and Southeast Asia. I'm going to just read you one little, and this is not really a pickle, but it's considered a pickle because most of those cuisines serve some sort of pickle at every meal, whether it's like a kimchi pickle kind of thing. So this is Szechuan cucumbers with oranges and almonds. So it's a fresh cucumber recipe, and basically what they're doing is... you know, you peel and seed the cucumbers, and then you put salt on them, and then in a hot pan, you heat up the chilies and the Szechuan peppercorns. So this is pretty hot, but you could do it less. And then you also take about 15, this is for how many cucumbers? 1 pound of 5 ounces of salad cucumbers. Okay, so 15 raw almonds. This is what I thought was kind of interesting. So you also toast the almonds, and then you grind the spices, you grind the almonds, and then a tablespoon of sugar. So you sprinkle the almonds, the ground almonds, the ground peppers, the sugar, and 2 tablespoons of fresh orange juice.
Oh,
doesn't that sound yummy?
Now, pickles, very good.
Yeah, when you have too many cucumbers, which we might be
we
having.
We might have
so this
that.
Book, again, it's called Asian Pickles, Sweet, Sour, Salty, Cured, and Fermented and Preserves by Karen Solomon.
Yeah. Okay. This is KHOI, and this is Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and the cotton is high. Oh, your daddy's rich, your mama's good looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry.
Yes, summertime. Yes, it is. Let's take a little detour from our discussion of cucumbers here, and let's consider insects. All of this stuff needs to be pollinated out in the garden. I see little busy, insecty type of folk busy pollinating my cucumber plants. I hope they're doing their job all around. Coming up, we have an interview from a PFI, Practical Farmers of Iowa, field day at the Dunham Farm, which is
near Grinnell.
Grinnell,
right?
Heritage uh-huh. Farm. Andrew and Melissa Dunham have a great vegetable operation there. And
yeah, it's
they
all
have
organic.
Been working. They have been working with the Xerxes Society. The Xerxes Society is—they are concerned with invertebrate conservation.
Bees, right?
It doesn't include us. That includes all insects and everything.
Oh.
Huh? And they work on habitats. Have been for years helping our insect pollinators.
We do have. Beneficial insects,
yes,
as they're called. That
we
means
do.
They help us.
They take their name from the now extinct Xerxes butterfly. It was the first butterfly known to go extinct in North America. And these folks got together and thought they'd just do something about it. They've been working with the Grinnell Heritage Farm for a number of years, actually on purpose, putting in things that will gather insects, especially beneficial insects. And Andy Dunham talks about
like putting in sunflowers that attract butterflies, right. That kind of thing.
That kind of thing. And they've been doing it for years.
The Tithonia. My Tithonia is blooming away.
Oh, good.
So that's a Mexican sunflower.
And there you go.
The butterflies love it.
Good. So thanks to Practical Farmers of Iowa and Nick Odie and all the nice folks that gave us this interview. I have a disclaimer here. This interview was recorded actually on the Dunham Farm during a very bad windstorm. So although you'd be able to hear Andy just fine, that noise in the background, there was a real
sound
bad,
effects.
There's a real interesting storm. This is Iowa. Let's go to the interview.
It's Andy Dunham, and I farm at Grinnell Heritage Farm with my wife, Melissa. The farm's been in the family since 1857. I'm the fifth generation farmer here. We went from being a diversified farm, all farms were back when it was founded in the 1850s, and contracted all the way down to the corn-soybean alternation when my grandfather was retiring, and we have since diversified back to having quite the assortment of fruits and vegetables and other crops on the farm. The farm is 80 acres, which for most practical purposes nowadays is not enough to make a living, but Melissa and I have had no off-farm income since 2007. And primarily we market through a CSA and sell our certified organic produce to grocery stores, other wholesale accounts, and through our CSA. So our field day is going to talk about establishing beneficial insect habitat as part of the field day. And Sarah from the Xerxes Society is going to come down and talk to folks about that. In the world in which we live today, where so much insecticide is sprayed in the state, there are very few Well, there are very few insects but pest insects left. So remember when we were kids, or I remember when I was a kid, we always had to clean the windshield usually two or three times before you could get another tank of gas. And I don't have to clean my windshield now really at all. And so we're living in a world that's kind of devoid of insect life. And so it's one of those things where if you want to have beneficial insects on your farm, it's the old Iowa adage, if you build it, they will come. So we'll talk about building it so they come. So on our farm, we've established little pieces of beneficial insect habitat. Pretty much every year we put some new feature in. So we've put in two fairly long beetle banks. We've put in a number of hedgerows and native tree plantings. I think we've planted about 2,500 to 3,000 trees and shrubs in the last 10 years with, you know, insects and at least in part in mind when we do that, bird life as well. And we've put in a number of different pollinator gardens and some places that don't get tillage so that we have some, not disrupted habitat, which a lot of pollinators need. So, the species that we're trying to attract, for the beneficial insects, if you take the pollinators aside, a lot of the native predatory ground beetles, so think of the big, big-headed black beetle that's about that long and has the big pinchers on the front. They're a predatory ground beetle, so they'll eat basically anything they can catch that moves. And so a lot of those types of insects, and there are hundreds of different species, have very specific habitat requirements. So you have to have exactly what they need to survive. And so the beetle bank is a great example where you have native bunch grasses that are raised slightly so that they don't drown out in the spring or in the winter. And that's where they overwinter. And so if you don't have that habitat on your farm, you don't have the beetles on your farm. So you're going to have to rely on more insecticide. I think my passion for farming comes from my training as an ecologist. That's what my degree is in, and I grew up being really passionate about the environment, and that's why we farm the way that we farm. And one of my favorite aspects of farming organically is seeing all of the wildlife that has kind of come to the farm. We now have wild turkeys that are here. We have about anywhere between 8 to 15 adult pheasants on 80 acres. You know, so we get to see a lot of wildlife. The number of bird species has just gone up tremendously. Insect life, either it's more abundant or we're just becoming much more aware of it. So I really enjoy that aspect of it. The first beneficial insect habitat that we put in would have been, it was after a Moses conference, and I went to a whole day session with Eric Mader from the Xerces Society. But that's kind of when it really jump started for me, saying, hey, we need to put some of these features in. So the habitat, the first time that we really started to notice was maybe 2 or 3 years after we put the beetle bank in. I think we had enough of a population to see small ground nesting beetles kind of move in and breed and then multiply enough to actually be there. And now, for example, like Colorado potato beetle is a pretty big pest in vegetable gardens where they attack potato and eggplant plants. And if we leave those be, we will have so many of these predatory ground nesting beetles that are eating Colorado potato beetles that we often don't have to do any control. But they eat everything. So like we have tons of praying mantids now too, just ridiculous quantities of praying mantids. And they will actually, in the cover crop, will set up shop right next to flowers that are in bloom so they can catch bees. And so beneficials do kill other beneficials. When I moved here and it was just corn soy ground, everything was pretty much dead. I mean, like, it was like it was a dirt farm instead of, we didn't really have soil yet. Using some of the crop inputs that kill off soil microbial life really limits the kind of habitat that you're going to establish on your farm. So I'm Andy Dunham with Grinnell Heritage Farm, and on August 10th at noon, we'll be hosting a PFI field day about beneficial insect habitat. The field day will run for, I believe, about 3 hours. Then there'll be a side journey if people want to go to the Conard Acres, which is Grinnell College's prairie, and there's carpooling available for that. And then following that, we will have on-farm wood-fired pizza. Come one, come all.
That was an interview with Andy Dunham. Andy and Melissa Dunham have Grinnell Heritage Farm, and there will be a chance to visit that farm Friday, August 10th. For more information about that, go to www.practicalfarmers.org.
Oh, Friday, August 10th.
August 10th.
We could go.
We could. Whoa. Yes, we could. Lots of field days going on.
One is particularly going to be interesting for not just farmers.
Oh, right.
And might also be a lovely place to take older children.
Sure, sure. It's lovely. So that's over by Grinnell. And don't forget the the wood-fired pizza. I mean, that would be
yeah,
fun
August
too.
10th. Wait, what time does it start?
Noon.
Oh, goody.
There you go. So, you are listening to KHOI, the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are talking pickles today. Yes, we are. Put up that summer bounty. And I want to remind you that the Donna Lana Kitchen has a website. We have archives of all our past shows if you just can't get enough of us. And there's a recipe page there. And the bread and butter zucchini pickle recipe is on the website as of yesterday. Thanks to Gio for that. He keeps our website up to snuff. You can go to khoyfm.org. So, Donna, any more thoughts on pickles?
Well, I have a couple more books, and this is a good season for quick pickles, of course. Quick pickles means you don't really process them, and you have to eat them quickly. Huh? It's I guess that's another way of saying refrigerator pickles, yeah. Right? Yeah. So this is it's called Quick Pickles, Easy Recipes with Big Flavor, Authors of The Thrill of the Grill. So it has three authors, Chris Schlesinger, John Willoughby, and Dan George. But I'm going to just read some of the selections from this is Fresh Fruit Pickles. So this kind of gets your brain going. Super sweet clove-scented watermelon rind pickles. Okay, that's common enough. Oh, but now listen to this. Rhubarb pickles with caramelized onions. These are all quick pickles. Pickled grapes and jicama with celery seed.
Pickled? You're kidding.
I know. Doesn't this kind of get you wanting to go? Balsamic pickled peaches.
Oh, mm-hmm. I love that.
And balsamic pickled grapefruit with shaved fennel. Huh. I mean, these are really interesting. Bourbon pickled apricots.
There you go.
Classic pickled crab apples. Soy and ginger pickled green mangoes. Pickled pineapple and cranberries in apple juice. I mean, you know, the possibilities are just endless. And sometimes you get a book like this that just suggests combinations that you go, what a great idea. And then it sets you to fiddling yourself. So this is called Quick Pickles, Easy Recipes with Big Flavor. Probably Amazon would have it or etc.
Yeah, just getting some ideas.
Yeah, just if it sets your mind going and pushes you into the kitchen, you don't even have to follow the recipes.
No, you might have, you know, this stuff on your shelf already and putting it together, as they say, quickly.
Right, and the book also has, let me look at the table of contents, vegetable pickles, fruit pickles, fermented pickles, oil pickles, pantry pickles. So it's a rather useful book.
I like that.
It's also a good book to make a gift of.
Oh,
if somebody is even slightly interested in the kitchen.
Hint, hint. Yeah, what else you got there, Donna?
Okay, now the other book is called, it's Nick Sandler and Johnny Acton. It's called Preserved. This might be an English book because it comes from Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, which is a, he's got a whole thing going, River Cottage. But what I like about this book preserved. Here in the table of contents, it gives you an idea of all the preservation methods, some of which are easy and some are complicated. But drying. Mm-hmm. Now, Lana is a big, what's that dryer thing that you use?
Oh, just electric food dryer.
Yeah. So she dries a lot of things. Yeah. And like for example, should you ever have the opportunity to have some of her dried heirloom tomatoes?
It's just whoever invented the electric food dryer. I mean, sure, you can do this out in the sun, I suppose,
right.
If you. But, oh, but the electric food dryer.
Yeah.
It's like one of these sous vide things. It's
right.
Just,
it's a
your
good
life.
Gimmick. And I must say they taste like candy when you dry those heirloom tomatoes. They're really good. And, of course, Thrifty Lana, what she's doing, I think, is you're drawing the ones that are less than perfect, right?
So you there's just, always some
yeah.
really funny ones that
yeah.
taste just fine, but nobody will buy them.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay, drying is one method for preserving. Now, another, there are sun-drying methods that are really, really ancient and used quite a lot, which involve, like, setting things with screens in open air circulation and quite elaborate. Salting, of course, is another method of preserving. Smoking. Mm-hmm. And actually in this book they talk about how to make a cold smoker and things like that. Sausages. Yeah. That was it because there's usually a lot of stuff in the sausages besides herbs. But you can make sausages were – I can remember this from when my uncles in Southeast Missouri would do – they had a smokehouse, right? So they would also make the sausages, and you can hang the sausages and dry them. You can do all, you know, that's what hams are. That's what prosciutto is. Those are all hung and dried salted meats. Pickling, of course, as we've mentioned. Now, here's another chapter. Herbs, pasties, of course, this is English, and infused oils and vinegars. So like the tarragon vinegar that I was talking about, where you just take the vinegar and you stuff the jar full of the vinegar in the tarragon and you let it sit and then you have tarragon vinegar, which is lovely. But you can also infuse oils like and make little jars that you give for Christmas and things like that, you know. So that's another preservation. Then, of course, there's fermenting, which is a whole universe into itself. Then they also go into sugar as a and the most common reference for this that you'll think of is candied fruits. For example, for Christmas, I almost always make candied orange peel. And other citrus peels, because if you want to make a fruit cake or something Christmassy and you don't want to buy the rather plastic-looking stuff, the preserved fruits that you can get at the grocery store, you can actually make your own. And if you are making them well in advance of the season, they're just there. They do keep for a long time just in a jar on the shelf. So I love making candied orange peel. Another preserving method, alcohol. Think cherries in brandy, for example.
That'll do it.
The bottling and canning. Now, we haven't gone into canning, which is what most people think of when they talk about preserving. And a lot of canning went on in my childhood, and I think people still do can. Yeah. But I find it's the most, oh, golly, it's hot, it's heavy, it's complicated, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to really be in a like almost a manufacturing mode because it's not worth canning four jars of something, you know. Then the other technique, which they're calling air exclusion, which would include sous vide, but it also includes what the French would call a confit, which, for example, chicken confit means you take the chicken leg and with some seasonings, you cook it and then you pack it in oil. With some garlic and some herbs, and then it's the oil, of course, has to go high enough in, has to completely cover whatever it is that you're confiting, like duck legs is a famous example. And this is a preserving technique because if it is covered completely in oil, it will not spoil.
Is that also called potted meat? Or is that more a can? Is that more
that's
of a lid
canning.
On?
That's a canning, a heat process, okay. Kind of
but
thing.
Confit. Okay.
And then, of course, they talk about freezing, which is marvelous, and aren't we lucky that we can do that? Because that is easy peasy.
Thank goodness. We're so lucky. So we can put stuff in the freezer. Yes, we can.
Just make sure to do one thing that you make yourself that preserves this moment of summer bounty and connects you with your ancestors, because, you know, I think this generation and, you know, probably in the last 50 years is the first time on the planet that we've been able to just go to the supermarket and buy anything from, that's the global food supply, right?
You bet.
It's the current reality, but it's only very recent in our long history of human kitchen eating, feeding ourselves. So make an effort to do something that will connect you with your past and your ancestors.
And learn to feed yourself. It seems kind of basic.
And if you got a recipe from your grandmother or your great-grandmother, now might be the time to do it. It's really a lovely thing.
It's a lovely thing. I've been doing some summer reading lately, and I haven't read it, so I'm pulling a lot of things out of the library for the summer that I haven't read. They've got a whole stack of classics there, and I got some of them I've read. So I've been reading The Great Gatsby, who I never read, and I read some Pearl Buck, and I've just things that, you know, you should read that, and so I'm going through that. But I also, this wasn't actually in that pile, but I always liked the library. I picked up Michael Pollan's book, Food Rules, an Eater's Manual, and he encourages us to cook.
Here's the beauty about that book. He kind of condensed some of his larger, thicker books, and he put it, and it's illustrated by this wonderful children's illustrator. What's her, how do you pronounce this? Maria Kalman?
Maybe? Maria Kalman.
So she does, you know, she's, you know, I've read hundreds of her children's books to my hundreds of children, right? But, so he made a version that is very, we'll call it user-friendly. It's not specifically for children, but it can be used on children, or it can be used on people that don't want to read the whole book, because it's very sound, sensible advice.
It's quick advice, and basically it boils down to eat food, not too much, mostly plants. We could do that. We'll be better for it. Yes, we will. Michael Pollan's Food Rules. That's a good summer thing.
What's the subtitle?
An Eater's Manual.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we are all eaters.
And another. Here's a shout out to my cousin Dana in Wisconsin, who runs a bookstore, Main Street of my hometown, Reedsburg, Wisconsin. She sends me things every now and then, and she sent me this little wonderful book called The Stinking Cookbook, and it is garlic recipes from the Stinking Rose, a garlic restaurant. It's a restaurant in San Francisco.
Yes, because I think it's, is it Gilroy, which is, they claim to be the epicenter of garlic growing at least in the country, maybe in the world, and they have the Stinking Garlic Festival, and Lana has just had her annual garlic harvest.
So garlic is in the air, and this cookbook.
Pickled garlic, could do.
Yeah, we could.
Garlic cloves is really delicious.
Gets your juices running. So thanks to Dana and her bookstore and all the guys in the barbershop right across the street there who, they tell me they kind of shut down and listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen Show every Tuesday.
Oh, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you. Everybody likes to eat.
Do you pickle your garlic cloves?
Have I ever done that? No, I haven't. I've had some friends pickle some garlic cloves and give it to me. I haven't done it myself. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've talked today about pickles and insects and some books. We'll go out with the voice of Patty Casey singing Summertime. It is. Support this fine radio station. There's lots of good things for your ears on KHOI. And thanks to Colin, our fine engineer. He's been with us as an intern. We appreciate his help, and he is going off to better things. So thanks for being with us, Colin, and thanks for your help. KHOI is going to have a 6th birthday coming up August 12th. You can listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen live Tuesday at noon. It's repeated at 7 p.m. or anytime at khoifm.org. You can hear us on your device. Yes, you can. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Colin Verzek. Eat good food and enjoy life. Morning.
gonna rise up singing. And then you'll spread your wings and take to the sky. Nothing can harm you. With Mama and Daddy standing by.